Do you like being invited to dinners? You're all invited to a lunch downstairs. I think something positive, but you're all invited. Do you like to give dinners and invite people to them? When you do have a dinner, do you invite only people that are close to you or ones that are less well known? For instance, maybe a visitor to our congregation. So we read here at the end of this section from Luke 10 that Jesus was passing by a town called Bethany. And Bethany is about 3 kilometers from Jerusalem, not a very long walk. And in Bethany, these two sisters, Martha and Mary, lived, and also they had a brother, if you remember, his name was Lazarus. We read elsewhere about Jesus bringing Lazarus back to life after he'd been in a tomb for 3 days. Did Martha and Mary already know Jesus? I don't think so. But I'm sure that they had heard about Jesus as he was doing his journeys from Galilee down through Samaria to Jerusalem, and he would have passed by. But they heard he was coming, and let's now turn here in the passage to Luke 10 at verse 38, and we're going to look at what we see Martha did. Now, as they went on their way, that is, Jesus and the disciples, Jesus entered into a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. She invited Jesus into her house. Now, right away, we could take some lessons from that. One is she made an accommodation for Jesus. And the idea of doing this is totally biblical. We are to show hospitality. Paul tells us that in Romans chapter 12. And Peter says to show hospitality without grumbling. And Paul in Hebrews says to show hospitality because you might entertain angels unaware. So we have various, there are other places as well. But do you think that's the key lesson that we should take from these verses 25 to 42? Is the key lesson, and it certainly a lesson, is we should accommodate people and invite them, show hospitality. But the very fact is that Martha gets rebuked in here, and so there must be something else going on than just the very fact of show hospitality, because she did that, and she's not commended for that. So what's going on here? So a second lesson we can take is the very fact that Jesus accepted the invitation of Martha. She accepted the Jesus accepted her invitation. Does this shock you? Actually, it should shock you. Why? Because at that time, a Jewish male could not have gone into a woman's house like that. He would have been viewed as going into a brothel. This is how amazing it is. And the fact is, you remember when in John chapter 4, when Jesus sits down by a well and the disciples went to buy food, and they came back, and there's Jesus talking to a woman, a Samaritan woman. And again, this is showing a cultural shocking that the disciples were amazed that he was talking to a woman in an open context like that. And so a key lesson that we should take from this is that Jesus was turning social conventions upside down. He had abrogated, he'd annulled, he'd overthrown this paternalism or the patriarchy the male dominance over woman, and in from the standpoint of Christianity, as Paul says in a number, at least twice, there is no difference between male and female, Jew and Gentile, all can be in Christ. And so Jesus was already turning things upside down, and the fact that presentation of salvation to a Samaritan woman, not just to a Samaritan, but to a Samaritan woman, was something that was incredulous to Jewish males. The third lesson we should take from the fact that Martha invited Jesus is that we actually have an award here. Jesus is actually sitting down in a house with these people. It's an amazing thing that the creator of the universe, who has taken on human nature through the incarnation, sits down in a lowly house and has a meal with these people. It's a great award that they have. Do you realize that if we turn to Revelation, we said where Jesus says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and eat with him, and he with me." So here we have Jesus dining with us. And this is a lesson that we can take from this opening verse. Now, in the new heavens and the new earth, we are invited to a great feast, the banquet of the Lamb, and we are invited to that. So, even, verse 38, simple lesson. Yes, we are to show hospitality, accommodate people. But the more important and more significant lessons are that Jesus was accepting this woman's invitation and turning a whole culture upside down. And then another key lesson is the award of having the creator of the universe sitting at your table. Now, as we go on, we read that Martha invited Jesus, and what did she do? She went into the kitchen. Well, I'm assuming she had a kitchen. How the layouts of the houses in Bethany, I'm not sure. But she went into the kitchen, and she began to prepare the food. And now we read, and she had a sister, I'm in verse 39, called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. What does this tell us about Mary? Well, so two things I would take from this, just this simple statement. One is that she understood the privilege. An amazing thing to be able to have the Lord Jesus right there in her dining room, the Messiah, the one that had been promised for 4,000 years, 4,000 years, was sitting in her home. Do you ever consider that you have the same amazing privilege? Do you understand the privilege? Here, in a sense, you've been invited right, not to downstairs, but right here to a spiritual banquet that is offered every Sunday with the preaching of the word, because it is food. It is spiritual food. And we have these opportunities presented to us morning and evening on the Lord's Day. We also have a prayer meeting. We have Sunday school classes, although during the summer we don't hold them. But do you understand the privilege that you have to actually be in the presence of God? The second thing with Mary, who's commended here by Jesus, is that she had an unassumed presumption. Where was she sitting? At the feet of Jesus. She didn't presume to think that she could recline on the couches, because they didn't sit on chairs the way we do. They would recline on couches, and the table would be in a U shape, and they would recline on couches. But she didn't presume that she had a right to sit among the men, but rather, she sat at the feet of Jesus. She, in one word, was humble. And that should be our place. What does Paul tell us about Jesus in Ephesians? And God the Father has put all things under his feet and gave him to be head over all things in the church. We've got to remember, just like Mary, we are to sit at the feet of Jesus. We're not to presume that we can take anything other than that. Take the best seats. If you read earlier in chapter 10, you have to go back earlier than what we read here. The disciples had been sent out by Jesus, 72 of them, and they come back very excited. They'd been making announcements of the kingdom, and they came back and they said, Jesus, even the demons are obedient to us because, or subject to us, and we were able to cast out demons. What does Jesus respond? He says, don't marvel that the demons are subject to you, but marvel that your names are written in the book of life. So this is Mary's understanding. It's not the power to cast out demons. It's the very fact that you can have fellowship with the Lord Jesus Christ. She, according to what Jesus says, has chosen a better way. And so we take some lessons from 39. Now, as we read on, what does Martha do while Mary is sitting listening to Jesus? And we read in verse 40, but Martha was distracted with much serving, and she went up to him, that is to Jesus, and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me. So you can picture Martha running in and out of the kitchen, trying to serve all these people, and she sees Mary sitting there at the feet of Jesus, and she's really getting disgruntled at this. The word that is used here in the Greek, it's translated here as distracted in verse 40. Martha was distracted. Can also be translated as anxious or bothered. So what's the issue here? What's the problem? Wasn't Martha doing a commendable thing? Yes, in one sense, and we'll look at that in a minute. She was being a good host. She was preparing the food. She was serving it. But the problem is, there's something deeper going on here. Martha thinks that she can honor Jesus by applying her works. That's what she thinks she's doing. And there's many in the church who think the same thing. They think that their work in the congregation or visiting or teaching Sunday school or hosting or cleaning or giving good donations, in and of themselves, each of these is useful. But there's a subtle problem. And what at root is the problem? It's the concept of faith plus works. Martha believed that Jesus was the Messiah, but how is she trying to get his attention? By her works. We have this tendency, well, if I do X and Y for God, then God should turn around and do something for me. The service that we have for Jesus, it should not be done to get anything out of Jesus. We should do it for the right reasons. And the right reason is not to get something out, but because we love Jesus and we want to be of service to him in his church. Not that we get anything out of it, but we are serving the Lord of the universe. Now, how do we know that Martha's motives were not right? They weren't pure. How do we know that? Look again in verse 40. There's a lot going on in this one verse. She went up to him and she said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me." So what is it that's going on here that shows that Martha's motives are not pure? First thing is she's making a comparison. She's comparing herself with her sister. And she's doing this in front of Jesus. She's saying, "Look what I'm doing, and Mary isn't helping me." And so she felt that her works were pleasing to Jesus, but Mary had left her alone. So she's making this comparison. It's a begrudging attitude. I'm doing this, and she's not, this comparison. And you know what the problem is at root? It's pride. The second thing that's wrong with her motives is she's making a false claim. She's saying Mary should be here helping with the work, the claim. I know what Mary should be doing. I know what will please the Lord. Why isn't my sister here helping me? What at root? It's pride. She knew best what needed to be done. Another thing that she does here is she gives a command to Jesus. She says, "Tell her to help." We should be astounded at this. She turns and she says to Jesus, "Go and tell her to help me." Just the hubris of this. And again, what's at root? It's pride. There's another thing that's wrong here. And I use the word chauvinism, because it's a cultural prejudice that she's displaying. Women in that culture did not sit in the dining room with men. In the synagogues, the men would sit on one side and the women and the children on the other. This patriarchy system. And there's Mary breaking all cultural conventions, actually sitting there among the men. And what's Martha saying? The nerve of her to be in there with the men. She should be in the kitchen where women belong. That's what she's saying. Can you imagine a woman saying that? Like these days, it's the other way around, isn't it? If a man were to say a woman should be in the kitchen, we'd all get slapped. And she's saying it. What's at root? It's pride. Fifth thing in here is there's contempt. She felt that she was doing better than her sister was doing. Again, it's pride. This is an amazing condemnation here. You see the darkness of the proud heart? We all have it. We think our efforts are better than our neighbors. We think that certain things are more important, certain tasks are more important. Look, if I'm able to preach or to teach, I must be better than those who set up tables or wash the dishes or prepare the food. Do we have that kind of attitude? We all need to be willing to help, because we're all equal before God. Some people will say, "Well, I got more important things to do than serving tables." Watch out. Pride festers. We think we're better than others. So, you know, there's more evidence here. More evidence that Martha's motives are not right. What are the evidences, the additional motives? Look at verse 41 now. Poor Martha. "But the Lord answered her, 'Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things.'" You see, Jesus turns to her and he rebukes her. He just gives her a rebuke of disapproval. Why is it that Jesus would rebuke this Martha, who is busy serving him with food, she loves him, she cares for him. Why does she get rebuked? She's not rebuked for her actions. The actions were right. She's rebuked for her attitude. She is anxious about many things. Now, let's look at this. What does Jesus not rebuke? He does not rebuke the works themselves. He doesn't say, bad meal. No, you shouldn't have cooked that lamb or anything like that. He doesn't rebuke those things. He doesn't say, I'm glad. He doesn't say, oh, your dishes are dirty, anything like that. That's not what it's doing. The very fact that he does not rebuke the works tells us that the works themselves were positive. The works were positive. The problem was her attitude. Now, this tells us something about how we should be doing our works. How we should be doing our works. And I preface this with a not. We should not be unconcerned about our works. We should perform our works that are associated with our livelihood. Whatever it is, we should never be unconcerned about those. We should be willing to do our work. In fact, Paul says in 2 Thessalonians, if a person's not willing to work, then he shouldn't eat. You've got to work. Adam was given a job in the garden to tend the trees. He was to basically work as a gardener. And in the book of Proverbs, we are told that we must finish our outdoor work, because in those days it was an agrarian, a farming society, before we did our other things. In other words, we need to provide for the necessities before we provide for the niceties. And so we should not be unconcerned for our work. Second thing is, we should not be uncommitted. We need to perform whatever tasks or duties God has given to us, whatever our calling is, we need to do it in a good way. We should not do it hurriedly, sloppily. We should say, well, I got to get this out of the way because I got more important things to do. And so this now turns to how must we work? And I'd like to suggest to you a few ways that our work should be done. First, we do it because we have a duty. Each of us, every one of us, has a calling in life. And whatever it is, we must perform it. We're not all called to be preachers. We're not all called to be politicians or pilots or physicians or plumbers. But God gives us gifts. He gives us skills. And we must never look down on another person's skills and gifts and callings and make comparisons. Everything that's we're called to do, as long as it's not sinful, is intrinsically good, and we should all take pride in our duties. The second thing is that we should do our duties with diligence. So I'm going to give you two illustrations. First one is, pretend that you were a fly on a wall in a workshop in Nazareth, say around 25 AD. You're in a workshop in Nazareth in Galilee. And there's a carpenter named Joseph, and he has five sons, Jesus, James, Joseph, Simon, and Jude. Now the eldest son, his name is Jesus, he's making a door for Ben Isaac, who lives down the street. And Joseph says to Jesus, you need to plane the edge of that door or it's not going to fit properly. And so Jesus, I'm saying hypothetically here, Jesus turns to him and says, oh, don't worry about it. It doesn't have to be a perfect fit. Can you imagine Jesus ever saying anything like that? No, he would have made sure that that door would have fit when it was hung in Ben Isaac's house. We need to take the same pride in being diligent in our work. Second example, there's a traveling itinerant evangelist. He's just had a rough time in a town, and the Jews have driven him out of the town. And as he's trudging along with his friend Silas, a messenger comes running out, chasing him out of town, and catches up with him. And he says, "Paul, there are issues back there. We need to deal with them." What do you think Paul says? "Oh, what a bunch of ungrateful troublemakers. Just let them stew for a while." Is that how Paul would approach it? No way. Do you know what he would have done? In praying in tears, he would have sat down, he would have called a scribe over, and he'd start to write an epistle, and he said, "Here's how you got to deal with these issues." That's what Paul would have done. So, we need to be diligent. Whatever our duty is, we need to be diligent. So whether you're making lamb stew or goat milk curds, or you're out planting barley, or you're shaping stones for the synagogue, whatever it is you're doing, you've got to perform it with diligence. And the third thing, because Jesus does not rebuke Martha for her works themselves, is we need to be dedicated. And you think, well, what's the difference between diligence and dedication? And I'll illustrate this. People can be diligent in their work for reasons that are not God-honoring. You can get good service in supermarkets or in other places because those people want to make sure that you have return business, that you'll come back, that their business will grow and they want to get paid. So people can be diligent without being dedicated. And Christians are to be diligent, but they're also to be dedicated. Listen to what Paul says in 1 Corinthians. "So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all for the glory of God." And then in Colossians, "Bondservants, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward." You are serving the Lord Christ. Do you see that? Whatever your duty is, whether you're a plumber or a pilot or whatever, if you're serving the Lord. And so that is dedication as how we should be doing. Our duty with diligence and dedication is what we get from the fact that Jesus does not rebuke Martha for the works. So what's the problem with Martha's attitude? Look at verse 41 again. "But the Lord answered her, 'Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things.'" She was distressed. What's the cause of this? The cause at root was she was setting priorities on material, temporal service above dedication to the Lord himself. Even though these works were good, they were for a good cause, she was letting the work and the product of that work be an end in itself. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus teaches that we must not be anxious. Not anxious about anything, he says. Period. This is difficult because we have this proneness and tendency to worry about things and to be anxious. And Jesus says, do not be anxious. And here he says, basically, it's not a command, but he says to Martha, you are anxious, and you shouldn't be. What's the simple approach for dealing with anxieties like this? Well, number one is just be obedient to the will of God. And summarized in the Ten Commandments, expanded in the case laws of the Old and New Testament, but be obedient. The second is, when you're doing service, do your best. And third, maintain a clear conscience. Because if you've done your best before God and man with simplicity and godly sincerity, then we just leave the results to God, and he will work all things out. That's what we've got to do. Well, Jesus concludes by saying to Martha, but one thing is necessary. I'm in verse 42. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her. So what is this thing necessary? One thing is necessary, and it can't be taken away. It's devotion to the Lord Jesus Christ. It is, as he says in the Sermon on the Mount, to seek first the kingdom of heaven. And notice that he says, seek first the kingdom of heaven. That means that we can seek other things, but first we have to seek the kingdom of heaven. It's a comparative. It's not an absolute. Not just only seek the kingdom of heaven, but seek first the kingdom of heaven. Outside of Christianity, every single other religion on the face of this earth, every single one of them is works dependent. Only in Christianity is it dependent on the one work that's been done for us on the cross. And yet many, many people in the church think that what they need to do is to add to their faith and belief in Jesus the works so that they can get points with Jesus. This is the false teaching that permeates so much of the church. We should do our works out of love for Jesus, not to be loved by Jesus. We've already been loved by Jesus if we have been saved. So when we do our works, we do it for Jesus, not to gain to be loved by Jesus. If you know Jesus personally, then what do you want to do? You want to have first priority the kingdom. The first priority is to sit at the feet of Jesus.